From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter Deucing in Dallas, Texas, and joining me in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado, Mr. John Grace. Say hello, John.
Hello.
And it's just the core today. First time in a while. Just you and me.
Yeah.
Well, the core. Mm-hmm. Stu is part of the core, but it's less than the core. It's, you know, it's
right. The core. You do have Stu's views. He dropped a new one last week.
So. Yes, he did. Plenty of content.
Maybe some new ones by the time this drops, so...
Maybe, we don't know. It's always a surprise, and it's always a good surprise. Right. So, today, this is the first time in a while we've done a newish movie, John.
Mm-hmm.
The film we're talking about today is Lupin the Third, the First.
Yes.
And, I don't know, how long have you been... Lupin the Third, anime, manga character created by Monkey Punch... the late Monkey Punch, RIP, died a couple years, 2 years ago, 2019.
Something like that. He passed away recently.
He is the great grandson of, Maurice LeBlanc's Arsène Lupin, apocryphally, of course. And
yeah, now they can say it because the, Lupin is now, Arsène Lupin is now in public domain.
Yeah. So, you know, this was a character I got into when I was in high school. I don't know about you, but early on when Lupin the Third came to America, they didn't have the copyright laws in Japan that they have here, or at least they didn't at the time. And so when Lupin the Third came to the U.S., early on, he came in the guise of various different names, depending on who was bringing him over here.
Right.
So he might be Rupan, or in the case of the Laserdisc game, he was Cliffhanger. I don't know if you remember Cliffhanger.
I was told about it. I don't remember it, but I was told. But it was actually a Lupin game renamed for the U.S.
And what they did with it was, so Don Bluth did that game called Dragon's Lair, where it was a Laserdisc game. Where it was animated.
The most annoying game ever to be advertised in newspapers.
Yes.
So I remember when Showbiz Pizza in New Orleans got one, or it might have been Metairie, Louisiana, but it was New Orleans. Their Showbiz Pizza got the Dragon's Lair game, and it was just a crowd around it. And nobody could beat the damn thing, because it was not paced like a video game. It was more like choose your own adventure on a laser disc.
What you had to do, I've actually beaten Dragon's Lair. But I would not have beaten it at an arcade because it's a game that's designed to eat tons of quarters. And the thing is you're this character, Dirk the Daring. You go into a castle and you have to save the princess from the dragon. Very basic stuff. But it's animated. And this was at a time when arcade games were very... This is like the 80s when this came out. And Don Bluth, it was animated, but you... had to follow commands on the screen or else Dirk would get killed. So you'd have to hit right, hit left, hit up, down, A, B. And you would die a lot, but you would kind of memorize what you had to do throughout the game until you finally beat it. And so you'd die a lot, you'd insert a quarter, you'd go through it again, you'd remember what you had to do. And it was just a game where you would just memorize what you had to do. And
it sucked.
It was a novelty at the time. Today it's a pain in the butt to play. You know, and Don Bluth did two more games like it, Space Ace and Dragon's Lair 2. I can't remember. It had some subtitle, but it was actually way more complex in terms of animation. But they took Castle of Cagliostro and one other Lupin the Third movie and combined them together into a Laserdisc and called it Cliffhanger. And it had the same type of gameplay as Dragon's Lair. But so Lupin had all these different names he came under until it was legal to just call him Lupin the Third in America. And when I was in high school, you know, the Lupin character, all the different iterations of TV media and stuff, it's just too much to go through in one podcast.
Right.
But when I was in high school, the manga started coming out in English. And there was a TV show. I think it played on Cartoon Network.
Yes, it was. That was actually the second TV show from Japan.
It was fantastic. But I remember seeing the comic at the manga at, I think it was at Borders Books. And I bought it. I bought the first one. And I was amazed at how borderline pornographic it was. It was like
it was horrible.
It was like something.
It was not good.
It was like something you would read. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's like rape jokes and stuff. If you go to the Amazon reviews for those manga translations, it's not well liked. They go, "This is not the character of the anime," because it really isn't. Like Monkey Punch originally designed it more as an adult comedy cartoon or manga or whatever. And then when they did the animation, they actually toned the character down a bit.
Big time.
Like
Big time.
In the Japanese with English subtitle versions, it's still toned down compared to what the early manga was like. He's like a pervert, and it's like rape jokes and all sorts of stuff that's not going to go over well with anybody today. And I think he was created in like the late 60s or something. So it was, and the artwork style, it's kind of like Sergio Aragon's, the Mad Magazine artist.
Yeah.
He used to do the little side things. If you know your Mad Magazine, you know who Sergio Aragon's. He also did Gru the Wanderer. So it's kind of in that style. And I did not care for the manga. I got the first two volumes, and I don't think I bought any others. I don't know if any more came out. I don't think they went over well.
A lot of them came out, but I bought the first few, and I was kind of hoping they'd get better. But they kind of felt like something you'd read in Playboy or Hustler or something. Like
they did come off like, exactly. It was just like a Playboy comic strip or something, or, Penthouse Comics.
It was very, there was just a big emphasis on nudity and kind of perviness, and it didn't have it. I think the anime shows and the movies really honed in on the 60s spy stuff and focused on that. Like there's still a little bit of ooh, girls, ooh, cleavage,
right.
You know,
he's obviously a lecherous slob, but. They bring in more of like,
he's not a rapist.
It's like, he's like a gentleman thief, in the movies and, cartoon shows. And, he's kind of a crusader as well. Like he's not evil. And, the manga, if you read it, it's not anything that I would recommend people seek out. I was really disappointed. I thought it was going to be like a cool,
me too,
I'll put it this way, in the cartoons and in the movies, Lupin, I think, is based on the French actor Jean-Paul Belmondo. He's kind of got the sideburns, and he gets into the weird escapades. Like, if you watch a Belmondo action comedy like That Man in Rio, which was a big inspiration on Jackie Chan because he's lifted a lot of scenes from it, that kind of gives you an idea of what a Lupin movie is like, or what it would be like if it were live action. They've made two live action Lupin movies. I don't like either of them.
Didn't Kitamura do one a couple years ago?
Kitamura did the recent one, and it's really, you can buy it from Asian Blu-ray DVD retailers for cheap. Like they're selling it for like $5. They're trying to blow it out of there. It's terrible. Lupin isn't even like the main character. Like apparently the scriptwriters, three or four scriptwriters, including an American guy from Mississippi who used to work for the fanzines, used to do Hong Kong fanzines. For whatever reason, the writers could not figure out a way to make Lupin a movie protagonist, because if you watch the cartoons or you watch the animated movies, he's kind of got it all figured out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think writers who write like live action stuff now have no clue how to write a mystery. They don't know how to write a setup or a scheme. They can't write something like The Sting. They can't write like a heist film that's convincing. There's something missing from writers today.
Well,
and
that's why,
for whatever reason, these guys couldn't write it,
That's why Ocean's 11 was such a popular movie. The Soderbergh one was that they were able to do that.
I don't even think it was a good heist in Ocean's 11, because I think those are poorly paced, but I think those get by on star power. Having all that star power in one movie.
But they couldn't pull it off in the sequels. It just, for some reason, that first movie, it just worked. But with this film, with the Lupin movies, it just like I think you're right when it comes to, you know, it's almost like they can't have the audience not know what's going on with a certain thing. I don't know. What were you going to say?
Right. Well, think about how dumb the Sherlock Holmes movies are, like Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. and even the TV shows with like whoever's playing him in a modern setting. There's no real mystery there.
No.
There's nothing. It's like you're watching an action movie. And I actually enjoy the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies, but they're not good mysteries. There's barely any mystery to them. You know, it's just not, I don't think writers know how to write that stuff. Well, that's why you get Batman movies where he's just basically RoboCop with a cape.
Well, they feel like they have to let the audience in on everything,
mm-hmm.
which is and this guy, I don't think does a good job of this. But I think that's one reason people like Christopher Nolan is that he gives you enough just to make you feel smart.
Right.
You know, he makes his audience feel intelligent by just giving them enough to kind of figure it out.
But, and then his twists are never interesting enough to, it's like, why'd you bother? You know, why'd you make this mystery? This stuff. Oh my gosh. Liam Neeson is really Ra's al Ghul. Wow. By the way, I didn't even realize that the first time I watched
it. The first time I watched it, I didn't either.
I was like, wait a minute, why did he say he's Ra's al Ghul? I don't get it. It's like, I didn't know that was even a setup thing to care about, you know?
Me neither. But Lupin the Third, I haven't seen the live action ones, but I've just heard they're bad. But Lupin the Third, I don't know if he's a character that I can see being done well in live action.
I can actually counter that. Okay. There's a couple of movies that I feel are inspired by or similar to what a live action Lupin movie should be like. One of them is the Aces Go Places series, at least the first three films in that Hong Kong film series, which I think are very loosely based on Lupin the Third, because you got the cop that's obsessed with the thief King Kong. King Kong is very much like Lupin the Third, uses all these crazy gadgets and stuff. And I think those are very Lupin. Those are more like the best live action Lupin movies you're going to get. And then also Hudson Hawk, the Bruce Willis movie, is tonally more like a Lupin cartoon brought to life, and probably didn't even mean to be. I doubt Bruce Willis was like digging on manga bootlegs and animated movie anime. Yeah, I really like the Japanimation, but it just wasn't happening, you know. But for whatever reason, that movie is more like what a Lupin movie should be like than the two live action Lupin movies, which are not good.
Yeah, and I'm not really a big fan of Hudson Hawk, but I do see it is more like a live action anime. And it's a shame too, because I like Kitamura. I like some of the stuff he does, but
Kitamura is obsessed with MMA, and it shows in his movies. And he's probably not the guy you want to get for a Lupin movie.
No.
He was a poor choice. At one point, there was talk that Chewie Hark was going to direct a Lupin movie in America with Jim Carrey as Lupin. But I don't know if that was just a pitch that got leaked out into the trades or something. But I do know that they were trying to do a Lupin movie, and then the rights to do a Lupin movie were part of this scam investment, Hollywood investment outfit. It was part of a big legal case, and I think Buzz Aldrin was invested in it or something. It was crazy. You could do a news search on it, and I think it's even listed in Wikipedia, but it was like part of this scam in Hollywood investment outfit. Like people were investing in these movies that were never made, and one of them was a Lupin the Third movie. Like, how obscure can you get?
Well, the guy who did this movie is Takashi Yamazaki, and he did a movie in 2002 that in the early days of DVD you would see at every store, which was Returner, which I never saw, but it's one that I always saw on the shelf everywhere. It's got this dude in a trench coat with a pistol. He's looking down and aiming his gun off to the left of the poster. And I would just always see it at video stores. Always. Never saw it. But he did this, and he also did some Doraemon movies. He did some Parasite movies. But one he did that I've been interested in watching, actually, is Dragon Quest Your Story. I don't know if you've heard about that.
No.
So it's on Netflix. You can watch it. It's a CGI animated movie like this one, but it's based on the Dragon Quest video games. Dragon Quest is the biggest video game property in Japan. It's humongous. It's a monster property over there. It's only recently kind of gotten decently big in the U.S., but for a long time, it just couldn't find an audience here. But he did this film is based on the game Dragon Quest V, which came out forever ago. But it's on Netflix, and it looks pretty good. I haven't really heard anything about it, but I want to watch it. And when I saw he did that, I was like, oh, okay, I want to go back and watch this film.
Well, it's just like Doraemon. You mentioned Doraemon. Doraemon is a huge property in Japan.
Oh, huge. Frankly,
completely unknown over here, I think, even to anime geeks or whatever. They don't even know who he is. It's like, that's how big he is. You know, only the hardcore fans know Doraemon, so
there's
but he's a big thing in Asia.
There's a Doraemon Story of Seasons game on the Switch, and that's a property that is near and dear to me and Eric, so, yeah. It's a Doraemon-themed farming sim.
I bought a bootleg of Doraemon movies collected on, like, a pirated Blu-ray at the Far East Center over in Denver's Little Saigon area, where they have a lot of bootlegs from China. And I negotiated with them, you know, to sell it to me for like half the price or whatever, because they're trying to get rid of their disc, because nobody buys disc anymore in the, you know, the ethnic neighborhoods and stuff, and it's like they just want to get rid of them. So I bought it, but I brought it home, play it, I can't find subtitles of the first movie.
Oh no.
So I haven't tried the others, but maybe, because I wanted to give this Doraemon thing a shot, even though I'm way too old to be watching most of this stuff. But it's a cultural curiosity to me, because I've been reading about it for decades. And it's like, okay, maybe I can finally watch this stuff with subtitles and maybe see
hugely popular over there. And so is Dragon Quest. You know, I almost want to do the Dragon Quest movie on the show, because I've never seen it. It's on Netflix. It's available. So
I'll check it out. I'll check it out.
And it's the games are great. I love the games. Really cool traditional games. So
and in the Midnight Movie anime cowboys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so Lupin the Third, the first. This is the first Lupin movie in like what, 23 years since Lupin.
I don't know if they've been doing because there's been movies in the last 20 years, but I don't know if they're TV movies or theatrical, because I'm confused about
live action stuff. But
okay, the live action stuff was theatrical. The animated movies, I think some of them play theaters and some are just TV movies. And if you go through IMDb or Wikipedia, I think you can see a checklist of what was a TV movie and what was theatrical, because he's still a huge character. And very, very popular. And he's still popular enough to get his movies played in theaters. This is the first attempt at doing a CGI animated or 3D. I don't know what you call it. 3D animated like Pixar. It's basically the first time to do that for Lupin.
Yes.
And it was written to be a live action film, and it kind of, you could pick up on that when you're watching it. It was obviously meant to be live action.
You can pick up on that. And, but John, one thing for me is I am not a fan of 3D CGI animated movies. Now, there are some that I do like, and it's not a hard rule, but typically I don't, I just don't grow attached to them. And most of them come out of America. Most of them are made by Pixar. And I don't like Pixar movies. And I know that that is a wildly unpopular opinion, but I just think they're formulaic.
Oh, Rebel.
I know.
Take it easy.
Me and Armin White.
Nobody's kicked off iTunes here. Yeah.
But they're formulaic with their scripts. Like, screenwriting nerds like drool over them, because they're
very Sid Field. By the numbers.
They do the paint by numbers thing that screenwriting freaks love. The animation style of Pixar. I've just, you know, when Toy Story came out, it was like, okay, that's cool. But it just hasn't. Nothing since has really impressed me.
It hasn't improved.
Right.
It looks the same as it did 15 years ago, 16 years ago.
With this film, I have to say, one big thing that it reminded me of was Spielberg's Adventures of Tintin. but I liked the look of this movie a lot more. Because mm-hmm. Spielberg's Adventures of Tintin, it had that where they were trying to go for people that looked like humans, characters
right.
that looked human enough. We're going for a little bit of cartooniness, but we also still want them to have some humanity, and it had a little bit of that Zemeckis Uncanny Valley that I don't like. These looked mm-hmm. like the cartoon characters with a CGI animated thing, and I really liked the look of it. I was worried when I would watch it that I would find it off-putting, that I would find mm-hmm. it weird, strange, like I do so many movies like this. That was not the case at all. Mm-hmm. I thought the way this movie looked was fantastic. It was just eye candy from start to finish. What about
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I will say that I watched the recent Studio Ghibli thing with the family. We went out to the movies to see the Earwig and whatever the hell the title was, and I was not impressed. I don't think Studio Ghibli made a very good transition to 3D animation. And then when I sat down to watch this, because I just bought it off, you know, I bought the Blu-ray blind. It was listed on Amazon. I went, oh, that came out a month ago? Okay,
same.
I'll just order
it. I saw the Steelbook Blu-ray at Movie Trading Company the week it came out, and I went, there's a loop on CGI? I'm buying it now!
Garrow sent me the trailer months ago because he knew I was a fan of the character. And even though I'm not a big anime guy, but I am a big fan of Lupin. And I always try to see the new films and give a shot to the TV shows and everything. And I didn't know it had come out. Like, I think it was released Christmas Day. It had like a weird release, and it was released by Shout Factory. They didn't even promote it really.
Right.
So I bought it and I sat down and watched it after we saw that Earwig Studio Ghibli movie. And I was like, God, the animation in this is way better than what Studio Ghibli did.
Yeah.
Like, it's strange. It's very fluid. And there's like a sky chase with involving like a plane or several planes and stuff, and Lupin hanging off of an old Sopwith Camel type of plane and everything. It looks like a live action movie.
Yeah.
Like, it was actually thrilling. Like, they did an incredible job depicting this chase. There's a car chase that's exceptionally well done, better than anything I've seen from Pixar.
And I love when Goemon gets out. Whenever Goemon shows up, you go, okay, he's going to slice something in half.
And I was astonished. I was like, wow, they really did it. They made, like, a 3D Viewmaster version of Lupin. Like, the only other CGI animated movie or 3D anime, whatever you want to call it, that I liked, and it's not a Pixar film, was the Peanuts film. It's pretty good. And now that I think that Blue Sky Studio or whatever it's called has basically been disbanded by Disney because they bought Fox. But I thought it was great because it basically, when I was a little kid in the 70s, one of the coolest things I had was a Viewmaster, and you could see, you would watch like 3D. You could look at 3D pictures from Batman. That was one of them. And I think Star Trek was another one. But the one I love was the Peanuts. Mm. And it was these amazing 3D shots of the Peanut characters, you know, Charlie Brown and Snoopy. But they used like puppets or something to create like a 3D effect. And they were the neatest things.
Cool.
And after we're done with the show, I'm going to go look them up on Google and try to find them. But that's the way the animated Peanuts movie looked to me when it came out a few years ago. And I thought, this is really charming. And they used, I think, an actual story from the strips where Charlie Brown has to do a book report on War and Peace. And and I loved it. It was really charming. Ronan Rowe was a big fan, too. He thought it was great. He goes, if the Peanuts isn't nominated for Best Picture, I don't care about the Oscars or something. It's just like typical Ronan, right? Mm-hmm. Watching this, I was like, oh my God, this is like, it's like a Viewmaster Lupin brought to life or something. This is great. And I was stunned at the action, and it's fluid and fast. I'm like, okay, if more 3D animation was like this, I'd be way more entertained by Pixar. And, you know, if they tried another 10-10 movie or whatever, it was done like this. This is exceptional.
And I enjoyed Spielberg's 10-10 movie. For what it was, it was mm-hmm. much better than, it felt like an apology for Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yeah, it was better than Kingdom of the Crystal. I thought it was better than Last Crusade.
Yeah, it was.
I'm not a Last Crusade fan, so.
I don't like Last Crusade because it's just Raiders.
It's boring. There's no action.
It's just Raiders, but you know, it just doesn't try anything new.
Yeah.
I like Temple of Doom better, to be honest.
Temple of Doom's a way better movie.
But
that's one of his best. Steven Spielberg needs to get divorced before he makes everything.
Yeah. But Adventures of Tintin, you know, it was really good. I liked it, but I felt like this was what that kind of movie should have been. It's just really streamlined. This movie, it was perfectly paced with action, drama, suspense. Everything was just so well balanced. And so the plot is Lupin is there's this thing called the Bresson Diary, and it details this ancient Aztec technology, and it was created by this guy named Bresson who was killed by the Nazis. Of course, you know, you can't have a Spielberg influenced adventure movie without Nazis, and
right.
And years later, Lupin's trying to get the diary, and Bresson's granddaughter, he runs into her, and basically they get tangled up together trying to find this diary, unlock it, and find the secrets. And of course, all of the typical Lupin characters, such as Inspector Zenigata, Goemon, Fujiko, and Daisuke. Daisuke is my favorite. He's super cool. Daisuke Jigen, with his hat.
Right.
Get involved. And, you know, and of course, you know, Lupin's grandfather, Arsene, is involved. I think there's some kind of, I wonder if there's some sort of Japanese fascination with Arsene or what, but there's a very popular video game called Persona 5 that I played on the PS4. And in the game, the Persona games always have these different themes, but Persona 5 has this thing where you're these high school students who get this, they enter this Jungian metaverse where they all have these personas based on characters from literature that they take on. Like one of them is Goemon the gambler. One of them is Captain Kidd the pirate. One of them has like a Lovecraftian deity, like a Cthulhu or something. It's like a UFO with tentacles. But the main character, Joker, his persona is Arsène Lupin. And the place where your character lives, you live above a coffee shop called Le Blanc Coffee and Curry.
Right.
You know,
my guess is the stories were actually very popular in Japan. They've always liked our mystery stories from Europe and even America, and it's always been a big thing. They love Edgar Allan Poe, and they like Sherlock Holmes because there's been a lot of anime based on Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, there has. Yeah,
and you can't watch a Toei superhero movie from the 70s or a superhero TV show without some character wearing a deerstalker hat and carrying around a magnifying glass and saying he's, you know, the Sherlock Holmes of Japan. So like, I know Kickeiter has a character like that. You know, for you Toei superhero freaks. But yeah, these writers, I think, were very, very popular in Japan, like back in the early 1900s.
And I love the promo image for this movie of Lupin with Arsene's top hat, you know, with his cane, you know, tipping it. So great. It really brings it back to that, that source material. But you know, you have him tangling with the Nazis, and you know, it's really funny because, you know, you have a lot of esoteric Hitler stuff in this movie with the big villainous organization is Annenerbe, which is the sort of you know, the Nazi organization that people project all kinds of esotericism onto.
And oh, right.
It plays out in such a hilarious way in this movie with Hitler in South America and stuff like that.
Oh, right. I thought there was a little Boys from Brazil influence there.
Oh, very much. But, you know, John, something that always is weird is when you watch a Japanese movie that deals with World War II stuff, and the movie is on the side of their enemies, the Allies.
Right.
But there are moments in the movie where you can tell, you can see the Japanese sympathy for the Axis come through.
Right.
Did you pick up on that at all?
Yeah, and this is something that Americans never realize when they watch stuff from Japan, is like, over there, they don't see like the Axis Pact as the great evil of Earth. And like, I have been told, and you could probably look this up, I've never bothered to because I don't really care, but I have been told, and I found this amusing, that supposedly there are Nazi themed bars in Tokyo.
I've heard that too. Yes,
because
I heard that.
They don't see it as the great evil. They just see it as a failed, you know, regime or failed political takeover of Germany. You know, it was a failed, you know, they were the losers in the war, and but their partners in the Axis Pact, because they were losers too. So they don't, like, they're not shocked by Nazi imagery the way we are over here. That's why their anime has so much of that. It will have Nazi swastikas and stuff, and people over here might freak out if they watch it, not knowing that the Japanese don't view history the same way we do, and they never will.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, totally that's just the way it culture. Is. And Americans make a terrible mistake all the damn time in daily life. You see it in the news, everything, assuming the rest of the world thinks like them.
Yes.
And it is one of the biggest mistakes people make these days. And I see it all the time in the media. And it's like, they actually think the rest of the world thinks like them, and they don't at all.
And guess what? You know, it's, now it's going to be the Chinese who are like,
yes, exactly.
The rest, totally. John, in 50 years, the rest of the world does not think the way China does. And they can't
right,
accept.
Right. Yes.
But no, there was this moment in the movie that really stood out where there's a Nazi villain who's basically in his final moments. And there's this picture of Hitler, and Lupin lets it go. And he's kind of like, hey, you know, this was your dream. Yeah. And I was going, whoa, wait a second. And I was going, what? It felt very out. It's something you would not see in an American movie. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, and I know people might be shocked over here, and they'll say like, oh my God, how can they say that? Because of the way the Nazis treated Jews and handicapped people and all that. They go, you got to remember, Japan wasn't exactly nice to Koreans and Chinese.
No, oh my God.
In World War II, they were horrible to them.
Oh, it's awful.
Very brutal. And they're just as... I mean, to where I don't even think Japan teaches their school kids all the truth about that stuff. They teach like a distorted history. And Germany has always apologized for World War II. They've been doing it since the late 1940s. But Japan has never really, doesn't seem to have ever really apologized for its role in World War II.
Like when America occupied Japan, they wouldn't allow them to produce nationalistic films.
Yeah.
But, you didn't exactly see the flogging, the sort of self-flogging that went on in Germany.
Yeah, and I will say, I think Japan snuck in the nationalistic stuff.
They did. Well, you know, watch 90s Godzilla movies. It's in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's Godzilla versus King Ghidorah, the 90s one, is extremely anti-American.
That's the most... That is the most racist anti-American movie ever.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
That makes Michael Moore look like Rambo.
Yeah, totally. It's amazing how I heard people say, oh, it's pretty anti-American. And I went, oh, okay, sure. And then I watched it and I went, whoa.
Oh yeah, it's pornographically anti-American. It's crazy.
And actually, the most rabidly anti-American Japanese film I ever saw was Battle Royale 2. Did you ever see Battle Royale 2?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever watched it. I know Sonny Chiba's in it. I don't think I've seen it.
It's you know, Battle Royale, the first movie, we know the you know, setup there. The second movie, the characters, it's a pro Al-Qaeda movie. Like, the characters form like a terrorist cell. And they they commit like a 9/11 in Tokyo. Like, they blow up buildings, and the whole movie is like them going, we need to destroy America. We need to take down America. And the Japanese government is like firmly on the side of America, and they have to take down the Japanese government because they're in the pocket of America. Uh-huh. And they never say America, though. They say that country. We need to do what that country tells us
that
to.
Country,
that
of
country.
Course.
But it is. It is.
Right. It's.
Okay. And John, I went to a super.
Anti-globalist. But,
yeah. I went to a super liberal college. And my African Americans in film teacher, mm-hmm. Who is not a conservative,
yeah,
he saw the movie before I did, and he goes, "That is the most anti-American garbage I've ever seen." Like he saw it and was like, he was like offended by it. But
well, I should say that in my opinion, I want to say in my opinion, in the last 40 years, Japanese cinema is dead.
Yeah.
And they have to make something shocking to get the attention of anybody because their cinema is fucking dead. It is so dead because their people only go see American and European movies. They barely make anything. It's like, it's like 10 movies. As far as I can tell, it's like 10 movies a year. Everything else is made for straight to video. I even think a lot of Takashi Miike's stuff was made straight for video.
Most of his stuff was. I mean, he made too many movies a year to be really. He was a V-cinema guy. Like
you're right. V-cinema, yeah, he's a video guy. And but they don't have a movie industry. It's not like it was in the 50s to the 70s where Toei was making, you know, a few dozen movies a year. Toho was making five. Daiei was making movies. Shochoku was making movies. Like they had all these competing studios. And, you know, guys like Sonny Chiba were making 40 movies a year, it seemed like, and doing TV shows. They don't have that type of industry anymore. It doesn't exist. It's like I really feel like, okay, I'll put it this way. Shin Godzilla was made by a guy from the anime field. Like
yeah, it was Hideki Anno who did the Genesis Evangelion series.
And that's their big gimmick now. So you're saying nobody with experience in live-action films can make a Godzilla movie now in Japan. You know, that's what that tells me is their film industry's dead. It's mm-hmm. dead there. It's like it's dead in Italy. It's dead in Japan. Like all the things I grew up loving. By the time I was old enough to say, oh, I'm going to go out of my way to go see these movies at a theater, they were done.
Hong
like, those
Kong.
Industries were done. Yeah, Hong Kong, everything is done. You know, Hong Kong still makes, like, 5 or 6 movies a year, but they're not considered mainland movies. They're considered Hong Kong films, and they're shot in Cantonese or whatever, but it's not like it was in the 80s or the 70s where they were just cranking them out. And even your cheap B movies were very enjoyable. There was this sort of spirit back then that made this stuff fun. And it was always fun to watch. Even if the movie was mediocre, you got some highlights, but you don't get that anymore. Well, you just get these big films that disappoint like Shin Godzilla.
Well, and Takashi Miike, when you're talking about the V cinema of the 90s, that was stuff where you could get away with a lot of stuff. You know, he made these kind of Cronenberg-esque.
Like women shooting darts out of their vaginas.
Yeah,
and
like full metal Yakuza, and, you know, stuff like
right.
that. Yeah. But I think that the fact that we're in this current... This film was produced by Toho. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're in this situation right now, I think it's incredible that we got a Lupin movie that's this good.
An entertaining Lupin movie is an absolute miracle.
I honestly don't know about you, John. We haven't really given our opinions, but I loved this movie. I was glued to the screen while I was watching it. I had a ball, mm-hmm. and you know, we talked about the Axis sympathies. It's only there for a little glint. You know, if you're not looking for it, you can't see it really.
Right.
Don't let that put you off. It's a very, it's just something you notice if you're familiar with this kind of thing. You'll see it now that we've mentioned it, but it's, you know, if to anybody else, it's going to seem like a Spielberg film. But I thought this movie was perfectly paced, action, suspense, great characters, great humor. Mm-hmm. I loved every second of it. I got, and you know, if you're uninitiated into Lupin, I don't even think it matters because the characters are so fun. Jigen and Goemon and and Fujiko and all these characters, you know, they come and go fluidly. You don't really have to get to know them because they fit in so well.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I think the movie completely shoots the shit out of Kitamura's theory that Lupin can't be the lead character in a live action adaptation.
I haven't seen the film, but that's absurd to me. Lupin's such a charismatic, I think you comparing him to Jean-Paul Belmondo is the perfect comparison.
Exactly. To me, that's what he is. He's Jean-Paul Belmondo. And even in some animated forms, you could, I think in the manga, he's got hairy arms like an Italian.
He's created by Monkey Punch. He kind of looks like a monkey, you know, he's got.
Right. And Jean-Paul Belmondo, if you watch him in these 60s films, and you can go do a Google image search, look at the 60s films and it looks like Lupin. It really does. You get the kind of mutton chop sideburns and stuff. They're there, you know, and it's the hairy arms, and, you know, that's definitely the mangas. It was inspired by that. And I think he influenced a lot in the whole thing. And I love like French caper escapade stuff. You know, it's like, it's a genre that's not always done very well in cinema, but when it is, it's great. And this really impressed me. My favorite animated movie of all time is Castle of Cagliostro, which is Miyazaki's first movie. And that's a Lupin film. And mm-hmm. I think that was the second Lupin theatrical animated movie made in like 1979. It was brought over here and dubbed in English. And I think he was called Wolf in that version. And that's my preferred dubbed version of it. But
it's not Cliffhanger.
No, it's not Cliffhanger. I've never seen Cliffhanger. It's like, you guys tell me about this stuff, and I'm like, whoa, I missed out, you know, because I would have recognized him right away. I've known about Lupin since 1986 or 85 because Starlog did a series of articles about, at that time, they were calling it Japanimation.
Oh, yeah. So yeah. When I was a kid, they called it Japanimation. My friend would go, oh, yeah, that's Japanimation. You know,
right. And they summed up Fist of North Star, and I thought, well, that sounded interesting. Bruce Lee starring in The Road Warrior. That's how they described it. And then they mentioned Lupin the Third, and then I was like, Lupin the Third. And I read the whole thing. Oh, he's the grandson of Arsene Lupin, which is a reference removed in foreign editions or something. And then at that time, nothing had been brought over here. And they had a still, and they said it made references to American and European entertainment. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. But I didn't see Castle Cagliostro until like 93 or something when the Streamline videotape got around. And,
I saw the manga DVD. That was mm-hmm. that was the version I saw.
Okay.
And it was, I got into Lupin the Third before I saw that one, and I got into Miyazaki because I saw Princess Mononoke, and mm-hmm. I saw that in the theater when Miramax released it. And then I got into Lupin, and then I found out Miyazaki did a Lupin movie, and he got his start working on the TV show. And I went, oh, my gosh, you know, he did a Lupin
and
movie?
His episodes of the TV show I don't think are available on the Hulu streaming, if Hulu's still streaming it. I don't think they're available on there. They were, because two episodes, they were from the third season, and they were released on videotape in the 80s by Streamline Entertainment. And they're hard to find now. And at one point, they were available to stream on Hulu, but then they lost the rights. At one point, back when Hulu was good, like 8 years ago, they had the rights to all the Lupin movies and TV stuff they could get a hold of.
Oh my gosh, I'd subscribe.
And they had the spinoff of the Fujiko movie. There was a Fujiko movie. There was like, it was incredible. They had all this 70s Japanimation, like the Masayama cartoon that inspired Sonny Chiba's super violent Masayama trilogy that he made for Toei in the 70s. They had a lot of rare stuff, and it seems like overnight they just lost all of it, and Hulu just became an outlet for NBC product that NBC didn't want to carry on Peacock, like in CBS shows. It was so boring. But Hulu used to be amazing. Like 8 years ago, it was incredible.
Yeah.
And I mean, you didn't have time to watch all of it. I mean, it would blow you away. And they'd offer the second Lupin series. You could watch it in English or you could watch it subtitled, your choice.
Wow.
And sometimes I watch it one way and sometimes I watch it the other. I prefer to watch this stuff dubbed in English because I don't see any point in reading subtitles for a cartoon.
Same. You know? I actually liked the dub. I don't know if you watched it dubbed.
I watch it dubbed. I'm not an anime purist. I don't even consider myself an anime fan. I don't care about anime really, but there's a few works that I will go out of my way to watch. Like if it's a Go Nagai, giant robot cartoon, I'll watch it, because just because of childhood, loving the Shogun Warrior toys when I was a little kid. And the animated stuff is pretty exciting. And Lupin, it's like I will watch anything Lupin related. It's like, because I like the character. Like,
yeah.
I think he's.
And they got a lot of the actors who've been playing the characters in English for a long time.
Yeah, those guys, they can do these characters. They know these characters as well as the Japanese voice artist. That's like, I don't understand the point of being a purist for hearing a cartoon voice dubbing in a language you don't speak. I think that's silly.
I agree. You know, and sometimes I've heard, Japanese voices where I go, wow, you know, there's something interesting here. Like I really like the Japanese voices for Dragon Ball.
Right.
The girl who plays Goku just does a great job. The guy who plays Vegeta and the guy who plays Piccolo. There's something about their voices I really like, but the Americans who do it do a great job. And I am more than happy to listen to those. And I would prefer not to read subtitles. And it's not because I'm not used to it. It's just because I find it more immersive.
Right.
To hear it's like it in the language I speak.
You lose yourself into it if it's in your language.
I was just going to say, it takes me a few viewings in subtitles to really immerse myself the way it does with English.
Yeah. And I think subtitles are so poorly written for a lot of movies anyway. Like, Shaw Brothers, the subtitles on the Shaw Brothers films that Celestial has commissioned are terrible.
Yeah.
The translations are off. I know they're off.
The John Woo ones are awful. Just complete garbage.
They've always been bad. Yeah. And it's just like, I cannot. Subtitles, because there's no quality control on them, I just don't care. I only care if it's like a Stephen Chow movie, because the Stephen Chow humor is very difficult to get across in English dubbing. And you carry more of it better with the subtitles because of, I mean, we're going to do a Stephen Chow show in the future with Garo, so we'll get into it more then. But it's just like that humor flies at you fast. You cannot capture it in English dubbing. Just like I was watching one of my favorite Golden Harvest Kung Fu films is The Miracle Fighters, and I got the Blu-ray last week and I watched it. It's Yin Wu Ping's most imaginative movie. It came out in 1982. I don't think there's ever been an English dub of it. It is too Chinese to dub into English. It really is. I always would get a hold of bootlegs of English dub Golden Harvest, you know, rare movies. I have never seen that one English dubbed. I've never seen it offered by anybody. And believe me, I bought from all the bootleggers of the day. It's like nobody's ever turned up an English dub of that one. I don't think they ever did, because it's too culturally Chinese. And when you watch the movie, you see why. It's like, God, you can't capture this in English dubbing.
Well, I remember something that showed me how people think that when they're getting subtitles, they get something pure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true. There's a good example of this is the film Let the Right One In. I don't know if you know that. That's the I don't know if it was it Swedish.
The little kid vampire movie, right?
Yeah. It was Swedish or from Norway.
We'll say it's Swedish. Doesn't matter.
One of those Nordic countries.
One of those countries nobody cares about unless they, you know, make a political stance and then they act like, oh, yeah.
Or if they do black metal or that people care about.
Right. Yeah. We like their metal. That's about it.
So the film came out in theaters, right? And it had a subtitle job that was pretty good. Then it came out on DVD. And fans noticed pretty quick that the subtitles were garbage. And it's because the people putting out the DVD, they had to pay again for the translation they got in the theater, and they didn't want to do that, so they went with a cheaper company. And I remember seeing this article where they did comparisons of the subtitles in the theater versus the DVD, and it was like reading the difference between reading the Bible in the Message form and reading it in the Douay Rheims. It was the Message. For those of you who don't know, the Message is a very bad Protestant succinct version of the Bible where they take everything and make it, you know, for dummies. And the Douay Rheims was the first English translation.
It's the WWE version of the Bible.
So, like, you know, it was just one had all this
nuance. You're going to hell.
Yes. One had all this nuance. The theatrical one had all this nuance. And, you know, you could see all this sarcasm and things like that. And then the one on the DVD, none of it's there. It's the sub. And so it shows you how, you know, there's this thought that subtitles are somehow pure, that it's the way to watch it. And especially in anime, I remember when I was in high school, anime fans were like zealots for hating dubs. And,
oh yeah, it's weird, and only in America do you get this. By the way,
I never understood it. Now I understood a little bit when they would change the music. I was like, okay, you know, change.
Right.
I understand that. You know, you're fundamentally changing something that the filmmakers didn't intend. But a dub, I never understood that. I thought the dubbing that Funimation did and stuff was always really good, and they did a lot of the Lupin the Third films, and I thought they did a great job with them. Like, you know, I saw Castle of Cagliostro and I loved it, but Funimation put out a lot of other Lupin movies and I thought those were a lot of fun too. You know, I never bought one and thought, oh, this is crap, you know. But
I think I've enjoyed all of the English dub Lupin movies I've seen, except for one, because I think it's a boring Lupin movie, is Mystery of Mambo.
It came out
in 78. Yeah. It's dull, it's boring, it has no energy, it's the opposite of this film. And it's just nothing going on. It just goes on forever. It's overlong and it's dreary. It's like Castle of Cagliostro was such an incredible improvement over that. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they didn't know how to make a Lupin movie until they let Miyazaki do one, you know?
And the people who made Lupin the Third, the first, said that Cagliostro, they tried to kind of imitate its beats a little bit because they saw it as the gold standard for the Lupin
right.
film.
I like the Fuma Conspiracy, which I think was a TV movie, and I really liked Legend of Gold Babylon, I think is the title. It's like, that's one I'd like to get a hold of again. It's a couple of those I want to see, you know, try to get them again. I wish they released like a comprehensive Lupin box set. So
yeah,
save me the trouble, and you know, like the Gamera box set Arrow put out. It's like, put out a Lupin box set and throw in the pachinko game with Lupin that supposedly came out in Japan in the 80s and is amazing.
Yeah, you know, I want to go to the video store near me and just go through the anime section and see what Lupin I can find.
Have a video store near you?
Yeah, I do. I used to work there.
Where the hell you live? You live like in the 1990s time warp or something?
No, Movie Trading Company, man. It's the best.
We got nothing like that out in Colorado.
Oh, it's so good. What's great is anything in the store you can rent. Just pull it off the shelf. Anything. You can go, can I rent this? And they'll go, sure. Even if it's a brand new release.
You know, I miss those days.
Yeah, you can pull it off the shelf. They'll rent it to you. You just have to bring it back in a few days. But they have a great anime section. And, you know, I bought my copy of this movie there. It was on their new release wall. But I just bought it because I was like, Lupin the Third? I haven't seen a new Lupin movie in forever. Like, but I used to get the Funimation DVDs pretty regularly when they put them out. I don't know what I did with them. If I sold them, you know, foolish of me. But I always kept my copy of Castle of Cagliostro, but I upgraded to the Blu-ray pretty recently because it just got a Blu-ray release not too long ago.
Right. I got that. I had to pre-order it. I said, yeah. And I even announced it on Facebook. I said, you know, I'm not a big anime fan. I don't really care about it, but this movie is great.
And you know, who's a big
fan? I'll buy it, pre-order.
Yeah. And Spielberg's a huge fan of that film. Like you can see his quotes on the various releases of it over the years. He's talked about what a great adventure movie it is and how it's been a big inspiration to him. But the Lupin the Third, the first, I just go watch this movie. It is a rare Japanese film. It's animated. It's CGI animated. It's all these things that shouldn't be good. It's CGI. It's a new Japanese movie, but it's Lupin. And it's got all of this. It's got that 60s style. You've got a Bond style opening. It reminds me a little bit of Danger Diabolic too.
It's actually set in the 60s. They don't really tell you, but it is.
It is, and it's a few decades after World War II. There's esoteric Hitlerism. There's all kinds of crazy adventure. It's just the Bresson Diary. It's so much fun.
It's. there's inspiration from the Flint movies, Matt Helm movies, and it's all there. There's little things you can pick up on, and it's got some Easter eggs for 60s Euro spy fans.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a ball with it. I can't say enough good things about it. And this whole series, don't stop with this. Go watch other ones.
Yeah.
I'm not saying too much about it because I just want you to go see it.
Right.
I was totally taken with it. I saw the there on the Blu-ray. They have the voice actors who played Lupin and Goemon talking, and they were going, "You really can't watch this movie once." And I was going, "Yeah, I've only seen it once, and it's one I just want to watch again." I want to force my wife to watch it. I wish I had a son because I could watch it, just because I'm just like, oh, I want to watch it over and over again.
Yeah, it's quite something. I recommend it highly. I think it's a lot of fun, and it's a good introduction to the character too, just like Castle of Cagliostro is, and I think it's just tremendous. And
yeah, pick this up in that way.
That English dub crew really has a feel for the characters. They've gotten used to them because they've done all these episodes where they've dubbed, and they've totally got it down. I think just when Shout Factory put out the trailer, it had the English dub team from the TV show just speaking the dialogue. I went, wow, they actually got those guys to do it. That's great.
And there's no weirdness with the lip movements either.
Right.
It really matches with the English dialogue. There are a few moments.
It's like the only dub team that works these days, because most new dubbing I've heard, very little of it I can stand.
This one works great. The guy who plays Lupin is terrific.
Mm-hmm.
All the characters are terrific. It's just magic. I thought if you're not an anime fan, if you like Raiders of the Lost Ark, watch this movie.
Yeah.
It's great. It's so much fun.
It's got two friggin' action scenes that are better than just about anything I've seen in live action in the last couple of years.
And remember, anytime Goemon shows up, anytime he gets on the roof of a car or playing with his sword, you're seeing some stuff get ripped in half. It's great.
Yeah, and then Inspector Zenigata is going to yell his head off.
Lupin!
Yes, exactly.
I just love how Zenigata, he's always chasing Lupin, then he's on his side, but then the moment they beat the bad guy, he starts chasing Lupin again.
Yeah. If you watch the first Aces Go Places movie, it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Carl Macca basically plays the Zenigata, and Inspector Albert all baldy. Or he's called Cody Jack in the English dub. The English dub version of Aces Go Places is actually pretty good. It was done by the guys in Rome who usually do Argento and Fulci movies. And he's Cody Jack and King Kong. They couldn't call him King Kong, Sam Hui's character. So they just call him Sam. But it's very much like a live action Lupin. It's a Lupin cartoon just brought to life. At least the first movie. And the third film is a lot like a Lupin thing. And that one I also recommend watching the English dub. But the funny thing is, the English dubs of the Aces Go Places, they're called Mad Missions. They're almost like completely different movies, but they have extra scenes that were shot for the European market because those movies were so popular in Germany and in other countries.
Yeah, those are so the versions I have on DVD. I have the Mad Mission box set.
Yeah, they're fun to watch. I don't like the Mad Mission of Part 4. And I think Part 2 is missing too much stuff. It's missing too much comedy. I think the Chinese versions of, or the Cantonese versions of Aces 2 and Aces 4 are preferable over the English dubs. But the English dubs of 1 and 3 are better than the Cantonese versions, in many ways. So, but you'll do fine watching either version, I think. But Part 4 is a totally different movie in English.
Hmm. But this movie's not.
And I'm not sure why, because it's like Ringo Lam. Yeah, Ringo Lam made it like the most English-friendly version, I think. You could have done a straight dub. I don't know why they changed it, but who knows. But this movie, terrific. Like Lupin 3, the first,
yes,
is tremendous.
I loved this movie. I can't recommend it enough. Go buy it. Go buy it on Blu-ray so you can watch it over and over again. It's one, when you finish it, you're going to go, I need to watch this again. I got my copy of Castle of Cagliostro out, and I was already going on Amazon looking for other Lupin movies because I was going, I'm on a Lupin kick now. This movie just kicked me off again. Again.
Yeah. You know?
Like, I was on a Lupin kick in high school.
Show to your kids.
Yeah.
Show to your kids and wean them off that Pixar shit.
Yeah, no kidding. The movies are usually pretty kid-friendly. Don't buy your kids the comics, whatever you do.
No, don't. I think they go for a pretty penny on the secondary markets these
days.
I
used to have them, and I sold them, and I wish I'd held on to them so I could sell them for more. But, man, I think like I would get them at the bookstore, and then I'd feel like, did I just buy porn? You know, like what's...
Well, I was in my 30s when I bought them, so I didn't feel that way. But I was like, these are not as likable as the cartoon version.
No, know? Not at all.
Yeah, he's kind of a dick in these. He's
he's rapist.
Well, it's like I bought the manga of the City Hunter because I love the Jackie Chan movie.
Oh yeah, it's great.
But the manga, it's like, and I watched one of the OVAs, original video animated things. And he's just like a pervert that's jerking off the porn. Like, he has erections, and the girl hits his erection with a hammer. I was like, what the fuck? It's like, the Jackie Chan movie wasn't like this. So I realized the Jackie Chan film, that really it's directed by Wong Jing, it's really a Wong Jing movie, is actually an improvement over the Japanese manga.
Well, and I think with some of these things, like Lupin, the people making the films really hone in on what's good about it. They cut away all the weird fetishistic stuff that the comic book artists were indulging in. And they go,
yeah, the otaku fetish.
Yeah. Like, you know, with Lupin, it's like, okay, it's the 60s spy cool, you know, let's focus on that. And, you know, instead of naked girls, we'll have like cool Bond girls like Fujiko, you know?
Right. Well, the TV version was very much, they had already figured that out. They said it's not going to work. Yeah. The way it's written,
there's a little bit of nudity. There's a little bit of nudity, but it's pretty. You know, it's like, you know, somebody's in the. It's typical anime TV nudity.
Right.
It's not freaky pornographic stuff like it is in the comics. I saw this interview with the guy who plays Lupin in the Japanese version, and he goes, I was drinking with Monkey Punch.
Mm-hmm.
he goes, great way to start a story, by the way. I was drinking with Monkey Punch. And he said...
you can't start it with a better sentence. You know?
He goes, I based Fujiko on this I based the drawing of her on this girl from high school. And the guy who played Lupin goes, oh, I'd like to see her. I'd like to meet her. He goes, no, not now. No, we're not going to meet her now. He's like, no, it's just best you leave to the imagination.
What's funny is a friend of mine he and a group of friends, they were at some sort of convention in 1981. Monkey Punch was there, and it was in California.
Oh wow.
And he and this group of friends hung around Monkey Punch, and they said, hey, let's go. Monkey Punch wanted to go to a movie. He's like, in America, hell, just go to a movie. So guess what movie they went to see? Because he was told that there's this movie in theaters that's a lot like one of your Lupin, like the Lupin Castle Cagliostro or like one of your Lupin movies. And he went, oh, okay, go to see it. It's Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Wow. Really?
Yep.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, like, Tex or something. No, I'm kidding.
The Outsiders.
Yeah, The Outsiders.
Conan the Barbarian. Just...
We're going to see
Deep
Danger.
Throat is just like your comic strip.
You know what does remind me of Lupin a little bit is Danger Diabolic.
Yeah.
That
Diabolic is based, you know, that's an Italian comic book, probably based on reading Arsene Lupin and Diabolik, or what's his name? Fantomas. It's very Fantomas and Arsene Lupin kind of rolled into one for an Italian comic book. So.
Yeah, like Arsene Lupin, he occupies the same space in my head as Fantomas, as Dr. Mabuse, these right. early 20th century supervillain who are actually the hero. They're a villain, but they're the hero characters.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of interesting because Persona 5 has sort of resurrected Arsene Lupin again, because that's such a popular game. It's so right. big. It just got another game that came out the other day here, and Lupin is this character you can summon, and he's got the top hat and the suit, and, but he also has wings, and he's... very elaborate, but
they also call it like French Shadow Man pulps or something.
Yeah,
there's different definitions for it, and we did one of those. We did the Franju film. I forget, was it called Shadow Man? I think that was.
We did Judex.
Okay, we did that a few years ago, and it's like that's a big thing there that I've always found intriguing and always enjoyed when I can catch imported, you know, material. Like that, but it's like I really wish it was more popular over here with like the video collectors and stuff, because I'd like to see more of it available. It's like that is some of the coolest stuff. One of the things I have on DVD that I bought that MHV, is that their name, the foreign video importers who have all the television shows subtitled, they did a Fantomas TV show in the late 70s I believe in France on French TV, and there is a subtitled DVD available, or was, on MHV home video. Whatever.
Oh no, you're right. We did Shadow Man. We did Nuit Rouge.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, yeah. Shadow Man, which was his Fantomas type character. Yeah.
Right, right, and so it's a genre I really dig, but I feel like they've missed the boat on doing like a. Okay, I'll put it this way. Chris Gans has announced a Fantomas remake. Never got off the ground.
He's the guy to do it.
Yeah, and he was going to do a Diabolik remake. Never got going. And which is unfortunate. They did do a new Arsene Lupin movie in like 2003. It is available to watch on Amazon Prime. First half hour is a lot of fun, and then it just goes to shit.
I
don't know if it's because in France they just don't know how to make this stuff, or they don't know how to structure an action film or something. It never got an American release until now. And it's on Amazon Prime if you want to check it out. But it's after the first half hour, it's garbage. It starts off great, though.
Well, guess what? In Japan, they do know how to make it, because this movie is that type of movie. Done perfectly. Perfectly! This movie is everything I wanted from something like this, from something like a Diabolik or a Shadow Man, which Shadow Man's awesome. Judex is awesome. You know, I love the Louis Foyade films. This has that vibe with that Spielberg adventure that is just perfect. I absolutely love this movie. Lupin the Third, the first. Go buy it. Watch it. Love it.
They don't show inspiration from Marvel movies.
No, none.
And they show no inspiration from DC movies. It's like, it's not inspired by the cape shit. So it's totally worth checking out.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know, John, anything else to add about Lupin the Third, the first? I can't give this a higher recommendation.
I'm just going to say this, and this will be what I'll be remembered for, is like this and Peanuts are the only CGI feature films I care about.
Well, guess what? I'm going to go watch. I haven't watched Peanuts. I want to watch Peanuts now that you've given it.
It's nice. It's a really sweet little movie. Oh, I mean, I like Shaun the Sheep, but that's stop motion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Shaun the Sheep.
Yeah, that's Aardman Animation. They're stop motion. I like Shaun the Sheep. That's about it.
The Peanuts movie. Yeah, I'm going to watch
that. There's my anime credentials. Sorry.
if you're totally new to Lupin the Third, watch this movie. But the other movie I say is a must-see is The Castle of Cagliostro. It's directed by Hayao Miyazaki, who did Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, the Nausicaa, Valley of Wind, Porco Rosso, My Neighbor Totoro. So many classics. You just can't name them all. So watch Lupin the Third, the first, and Castle of Cagliostro. Those are the two that you can watch either one of them and you're going to love it. You're going to fall in love. You're going to want to watch all of these movies and, you know, you won't be disappointed.
Yeah. It's a great gateway, to Lupin.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So what would you rate this out of 10, John?
I guess I'm going to go with an 8.
I'm going with a 9. I'm going high. Yeah. I
love
it.
Should I go Fellini and go 8.5? Give it a Fellini.
Put on your Marcello sunglasses.
Yes. Which is a movie I enjoy. That's one of the Fellinis I dig.
I like, there's a few Fellini movies that are great and that's one of them.
Yeah.
I'm just flabbergasted at how much I like this movie. I want to watch it again, like right now. So,
yeah.
That's all I have for this week. What about you?
That's about it for me.
Mm-hmm. Go listen to
Maybe
Steve's
we'll
news.
Have some. We'll have some big news, I think, in the next couple of weeks.
Hope
some,
so.
Something to announce. Yeah.
Hope so. Something to announce. Go listen to Stu's views. Stuart's been posting some good stuff on the feed. We've been very good about putting out content for you this year, and hopefully we will continue to do so. And so hopefully we'll have some big announcements soon as well. So,
yeah.
Well, John, if that's all, I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
So that's about all. Peace out.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. And hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. And find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.